night. When Reed, Martin, Teddy Spencer, and I last spoke on the podcast, it was the first week of our four-week stay here at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged. It is now the Friday of the last week. We have three more shows left. And when we last talked, it was going to be a race to the finish line to see who between Teddy or Reed would see the most productions over the three-week time. Do we have a winner yet? Teddy?
I have not calculated my total yet, so I'm not ready to make that call, but I think Reed might be beating me.
What do you think, Reed?
I'm at 55.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 507, Our Edinburgh Favorites.
At the moment, I have plans for 58, and then I said, well, I just need to find two shows anywhere, because I want a round number. Yeah. And that actually passes. 2 years ago, I saw 50, and that seemed like a lot. And this time, I have...
Ridiculous is the word you were looking for.
Yes. And it's weird. This time, I said, I'm just not going to. But then it's like the show is done, and it's not time for dinner yet, or we have some sort of publicity thing, and now I've got an hour. Well, what's on? Yeah. And so I just go see stuff.
Yeah. Well, first of all, even if my wife and daughter weren't here for almost the entire time, I wouldn't have been trying to catch you guys, but they were here for a lot. So the three of us just did spend a lot of time just sort of being tourists and going to see a bunch of things together and seeing some things that I had seen before that I wanted them to see, which was interesting in itself, seeing shows that I had loved a couple of years ago through their eyes and being slightly disappointed a couple of times. I went, oh, shoot.
Well, and the show, if it's 2 years old, maybe it's stale or maybe the cast is different, so that doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't great 2 years ago.
Yeah. Well, and one thing that remained great for me was Baby Wants Candy, the improvised musical out of Chicago group of folks. They improvise a brand new musical every single night, and it was just as good as I remember the last one being, and they were great.
They were great 2 years ago. I went to see them a few nights ago and loved it, and I guess if I'm voting by my feet, I bought a ticket to see them again this year.
Yeah, that's true, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a cheap son of a bitch, so I saw as much as I could for free here at the Pleasance, because with our Pleasance passes, we can see whatever shows that play at the Pleasance that have available seats.
Well, and I should say, you know, of my 50 or 60 shows, I think half of those have been for free at the Pleasance.
Yeah, yeah, which is great. So Reed, what have been the highlights for you?
Well, I've got my list here. I starred six of the shows, meaning these really stood out for me. One of them was Baby Wants Candy. Nina Conti, which is a very mainstream act, she's a ventriloquist, and she has had these masks manufactured, half masks, that she puts up on audience members and pulls people on stage and has discussions with them, but she's providing the voices. Yeah. So she's improvising half of her show. The other half is with this monkey puppet that I'm sure that's all scripted. But and she laughs at what the audience members are saying, and then you have to remind yourself, she's laughing at herself, which normally bugs me, but she just does it in a very charming way, and you buy into the conceit that the other people are talking.
And she's manipulating the half masks that the audience members are wearing. So not only, I mean, as a ventriloquist does. You throw your voice and you manipulate the mouth of these things.
Right. So the mouth open, she's having the mouths of these masks open and close while she's providing the voices. And it's absolutely brilliant.
I bought a ticket to see her Monday night, our last night here. Really looking forward to seeing her again.
What else was on my list? Our friend Zach Moore, who has toured with us as a stage manager and is our resident genius sound designer, and he works at the Pittsburgh Public Theater, sent us an email. He said, Puddles Pity Party is playing. You need to go see Puddles Pity Party. Well, I'd seen the poster for this, and as a former England clown, I look at the poster, and this is white face clown and Pity Party, oh, the sad white face, and I had no interest, but I completely trust Zach. And I went to see Puddles Pity Party, and it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And to describe it, listeners will go, well, that doesn't sound that great. So I don't know. I guess I could. He's got a really great rock and roll baritone. He doesn't talk, but he sings and he interacts with the audience. And describing it, I'm not sure can do it justice.
Well, both those two examples, Nina Conti and Puddle's Pity Party, if you Google them, you can find YouTube videos of both of them.
Absolutely.
And they're both terrific, and they will give you a taste of what it's like to see them live and to be in the room with them as they're doing, particularly Puddles, which is in a very tiny, who was in a very tiny room, working a very tiny room. Nina's in a huge room this year.
Yeah. Let's see, what else do I have on my list? There was a play called Counting Sheep, which was a very immersive play. What I loved about it, it's the kind of thing you can only really see at a festival. It's a huge cast, and the venue is a church set up into a theater. But basically, it's the unrest, the civil unrest in the Ukraine, and the audience, there's performers, and then the audience is interacting with the performers and dancing and throwing bricks at the police and trying to avoid gunfire. You know what I mean, within the bounds of what...
Yeah.
Let's say, so it was very immersive and very interesting. Then I saw a show, which Teddy saw too, called PSS, like, can I get your attention? It's a two-person circus skills clown show, which was absolutely brilliant.
Just an hour of joy. Really simple, two clowns, a male and a female, but, playing games with each other, solving problems. But she in particular was just extraordinarily charming, and it kind of redefined what my idea of clowning was, I could have seen her without the makeup and the costume and stuff, and it still would have been just
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I see clowns and they're very funny, and sometimes they don't use skills at all, or they have some skill. Yeah. Or sometimes people are very skillful and they're dressed as clowns, but they're not particularly funny. And I thought this hit a real sweet spot, because much of it was just simply clowning without doing any tricks.
Yeah.
But then when they did the tricks, oh my gosh, this is incredible.
Yeah, incredible trapeze act, and the ladder act and all these things.
Right, and balancing on shoulders and pulling an audience member up on stage and then standing on his shoulders.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, now, it's funny to hear you describe this stuff, and this might be the subject of a separate podcast, but would you call this show a play?
No, I don't think it's a play. And yeah, I think that's definitely another podcast, because this is a discussion we've been having for the last several weeks. You see something, you go, it's definitely theater.
Yeah.
Is it a play? And so I think that's a different discussion. No, but this is a show.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had one more thing that stood out for me, which is called The Toad Knew. And this was the International Festival. There's the Edinburgh International Festival, which is in big venues and big international people performing, and then the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, which is what we're doing. This is at the main festival.
And the International Main Festival, one is invited to perform at this. At the Fringe, anybody who can raise the money can come.
Yeah, exactly right. And so the Toad Knew is performance art. And it's all French company names and French actors, so I'm not going to... But if the Toad Knew, if you look it up, you can find it.
But the lead actor...
The lead actor and the creative force behind it is Charlie Chaplin's grandson.
And Eugene O'Neill's great-grandson.
Yes. And it's funny. He's taller than Charlie Chaplin, and he's more muscular, but he's sort of got that curly hair, and it's grayish, and he's got the eyes. I mean, it's a little weird to go, wow, he's Charlie Chaplin's grandson, and it looks like... And this is a performance art piece that's just... a visual feast for the eyes. Like all performance art, there isn't a storyline. And even in the program notes, he says, I'm not trying to have a message, and I'm not trying to have a story. It's an experience.
We're going tonight, so I'm excited. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Teddy, what are some of your faves?
Some of my faves, yep. I also loved Randy Writes a Novel, which kind of got us talking about what's a play, what's not a play. But it's a one-man puppet storytelling / kind of stand-up show, but it's incredible puppetry, really fascinating, funny stories, and... probably my favorite thing I've seen at the Fringe.
I mean, it would have been, because I saw it, Dee and I and Daisy and I also saw it, and it probably would have been just as good had he done it for real without the puppet. Yeah, just as funny.
Yes.
But just as funny. Yes. Maybe not as good, not as theatrical. Yeah. But the element, the element of a round-headed purple puppet telling us this story, this character telling us this story, gave it that extra dimension.
I don't know if it would have been as funny, because when I saw it, there was one point where he asked an audience member that he had been interacting with a question. The audience member just simply didn't respond, and he, you know, gave it a beat, and then just let out this huge belch. And if it was just a guy doing that, I think I would have been taken aback by that. But coming out of the puppet, that level, like that kind of immediacy, he can get away with things just like a fool can in Shakespeare, right? He can just... I gave him freedom as an audience member, and I thought...
And as an Avenue Q, puppets saying raunchy things is inherently funny.
Absolutely. Yeah, Randy writes a novel. What else? Dublin Old School, which was a two-person show about an aspiring DJ in Dublin, kind of who's also struggling with a drug addiction, kind of a la Train Spotting, but really kind of gritty, high-energy performances in a small space, one of the more polished, impressive feats of acting I saw at the festival, I think. Yeah.
Cool.
Also part of the international festival, the Glass Menagerie, with Cherry Jones, was really great.
I'm Andy Zaltzman, co-host of the Bugle podcast, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Well done. Where can you RSC the RSE? Today was our final performance of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged, not only at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, but for all of 2016. But don't worry, we'll be back with more performances of it in 2017 in both the US and the UK. We fly home tomorrow, get about 5 days rest, then take off for our fall tour of the special election edition of The Complete History of America, Abridged. We'll take it to more than 17 states, including Missouri, Iowa, Montana, Indiana, Minnesota, Utah, Michigan, Kentucky, Alaska, Washington, New Jersey, Ohio, Virginia, South Carolina, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Florida. Those dates are all up on our website now. We'll also be touring for 3 weeks in China. We'll have more information about all of our overseas tours later this fall. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
Except for Glass Menagerie, I'm not sure I heard a play. You guys mentioned a play as part of your phase.
Well,
Dublin Old School is a play.
Oh, it is. Okay, Dublin Old School.
Yeah,
okay.
Dublin Old School, I definitely would say is a play. You could give that script to two other guys and they could perform it.
Make it work.
What I think is interesting, correct me, Teddy, but I think Teddy likes to see theaters, but I think my impression is Teddy's seen more plays. You tend to concentrate on comedy, and I'm kind of all over the place.
Yeah. Although you see a lot of circus.
Well, I haven't.
And do you see a lot of
circus? I mean, because I was sort of breaking down. I've seen one modern dance piece. I've got a ticket for another one. I've seen 12 plays, theater.
Okay.
Three mask shows, two improv, one hypnotist. I've never seen a hypnotist show before. Two pieces of performance art, two circus things, three clowning physical theater, three sketch shows, eight stand-ups, one musical review, three magic shows, one impressionist, seven music that could be instrumental or singing.
That's great. Is there some overlap on those, Luke?
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah, and that's what's so interesting is a lot of these things are not easily defined. When I was trying to categorize them, I go, well, okay. Like the Doug Anthony All-Stars, this Australian musical comedy trio, are they stand-up? Are they music? I mean, and that's what's just great about the Fringe. Yeah, I think categorization is sometimes hard, and that's what's fun.
Yeah. One show that I forgot to mention that I really, really love that's probably in my top five was A Simple Space by Gravity and Other Myths, an Australian acrobatic troupe. Really gritty, only their bodies, pretty much, no other implements, but kind of breathtaking. You know, it's one of those things where I hear people talk about loving to go see dance shows and that it hits them in an emotional place. I don't have that normally, but watching these people do these acrobatics and just trusting each other so much, it was hard not to just be crying the whole time because it was just, it hit me in a visceral place.
Right.
Now, you have haven't said too much what you liked other than Baby Wants Candy.
Yeah, no, I've been letting you guys take over. The I've seen, you know, Matt Pearson, one of our UK actors, came up to see us, and he did the comedy tour 2 years ago. He did some Shakespeare performances, and he said this, and I totally agreed with him, is that you tend to get more bang for your buck from comedy shows than theater shows up at the Fringe, and I think that's absolutely true. And for me, I'm kind of going, yeah, I'm not going to see everything, and so I want to make my things count. Mm-hmm. So I think I tend to lean towards the comedy more. I did see a couple of plays, and again, plays that I really liked that I can't imagine seeing too many other places because I just don't think they're going to have that much of a commercial life. Mm-hmm. One of them was a play called Trolling by Rob Crouch, an actor who's in two shows up here, and he's in Trolling, and it's a one act about the dark side of the internet, and I could see it was great. It had a Michael McKean of Spinal Tap fame described it as the dumbwaiter slash it gives off a dumbwaiter slash sleuth vibe, which I thought was really right on. And for my money, it could have been more sleuthy, yeah. But I really liked it just because, again, you won't see it. Saw that play, Please Excuse My Dear Aunt Sally, which I also really liked. And I didn't think I would, and it had contained elements of things that I rarely like, but I did like in the hands of this small company from Brooklyn. I can't remember their names. But
1 year lease, six month lease, something.
Yeah. 1 year lease, I think. Yes.
Yeah. I think you're right.
And they're out of Brooklyn. And then one of the other big highlights for me was Ostentatious, an hour long improvised Jane Austen novel, based on one suggestion from the audience, and it was just crackerjack. The acting was great. The improvisation was great. Their commitment to the narrative was terrific. We'll talk in a separate podcast about what constitutes a play, but there are very few comic plays done. They all seem to be very serious, the ones that I've seen. Yeah. I mean, I think our play, William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, is one of the few comic plays on the Fringe, and thankfully it's getting... Maybe that's why it's getting such good reviews.
Maybe. Now, the thing that you have talked to me the most about was actually that concert you went to at the Gilded Balloon.
Yeah, that's true. I did see, yes, I saw Colin Hay. Colin Hay was the lead singer of Men at Work, and then he's had a solo career, you know, for the last 30 years. And it was just, yeah, I like Men at Work, but more than that, so I got to hear some familiar songs, and yes, he sang Down Under and told very funny stories about having to sing Down Under. But he's a great storyteller. So between songs, he's telling stories of his life. He's struggled with addiction. He was a Scottish kid who at 10 or 11 got moved to Australia, so he grew up there, and he's got Australia. So he was a teenage Australian. That's why he was, you know, the front man for an Australian band. It was just fun to see. It was great to see a professional musician in such close quarters at a great venue at the Gilded Balloon, being so just adept and talented. You don't see that level of musicianship rarely that close. And that was great. What was lovely about Puddle's Pity Party is that he's got this amazing voice, and I expected the curtains to part and we get to see the kick-ass band behind him. But there's no band. He's singing to backing tracks, but they're great. The sound was so good, you felt like there was a rock band in the back.
Yeah. Now, on the opposite end of the spectrum, how many really we're not going to name names. How many really terrible shows did you see?
Well, I probably didn't see as many as you guys did.
Because you haven't seen as many shows.
I haven't seen as many shows. But there were at least three or four that I'm really glad I didn't pay for.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one. It was called Seance Fiction.
Uh-huh.
An improvised seance. And that sounded fantastic to me.
Uh-huh.
And I thought you'd come in and you'd sit down and you would see the seance happen in real time. And that's not what happened. First of all, I'm going to be talking about this on other podcasts, I know. The the British improv generally tends to like to play games. So, like, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Or Paul Merton's Impro Chums or whatever. Or Showstoppers, the improvised musical. They like to get a lot of suggestions from the audience and then get little suggestions from the audience as the play goes along. And so, for me, it's just my preference. I can't get any momentum going. So, this seance that I was expecting to happened in the last 5 minutes. And it was just, there was no ending to it. Now, maybe it's a new show. Maybe they're working on it. But that was hugely disappointing to me. That was my biggest disappointment.
I don't know. I've, looking at my list, I haven't seen too many stinkers. A local company, an amateur drama company from Edinburgh, was doing a Scottish adaptation of Servant of Two Masters, and I'm directing Servant of Two Masters at Santa Rosa JC this coming school year. So I knew what it was, right? So is it professional? Is it slick? No, but it was good to see it. But was it good? Probably not. Yeah. Very few stinkers. I'd say maybe I've seen four out of the 55 I've seen so far. Maybe four or five shows that were kind of bad, but not many.
Okay.
Yeah, I would also, four or five, if I was a reviewer, that would have gotten one star. Right.
Talking about stars, like Showstoppers, the improvised musical, I would have given it five stars, like I gave Baby Wants Candy, except for the structure of the show has a narrator keep continually interrupting them and changing things up and changing the styles. And that, for me, I would deduct it two stars for just shut up and let the actors are improvising it beautifully on their own. Stop making them jump through hoops. They're already jumping through hoops. You don't need to tell the audience, point out to the audience, look at the hoops we're jumping through.
Yeah.
We get it. Now, maybe I'm in the minority, but that's how I feel.
Now, that being said, only about five clunkers. Tomorrow's Saturday, and I have booked, I think, two high school or one high school and one college production, one of King John and one of Troilus and Cressida tomorrow. So if we recorded this podcast tomorrow, I think I would be adding to my list.
I've read good things about Troilus and Cressida. I think that I haven't seen anything about King John, but I've read good things about Troilus and Cressida. So.
Codpiece crossed.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your favorite fringe show via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, master flyerer Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Brock Hafner. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Andy Zaltzman, co-creator of the Bugle podcast. One of my absolute highlights of this year's Fringe was finally getting to see Andy's stand-up show, Planet Zed, and getting to meet him and chat afterwards. Andy was gracious enough to let me interview him for this podcast, and you will get to hear that in a few weeks. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 507 1521sts of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
It's not a race, it's a journey.
Fuck it, it's a race.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.